That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
Think the 27th pick is just a late-round afterthought in the NFL draft? Think again. From the reliable offensive lineman who played forever to an explosive running backs with Hall of Fame peaks, this slot is a total wild card. Today, we're counting down the top five players taken at number 27, including a Patriots dynasty anchor, a Texas legend, and a man who considered the greatest pure passer ever to grip a football. Is your team picking 27th this year? Let's find out if they're about to land a bust or a gold jacket. Guest historian Ed Cleese joins us once again on Pigskin Dispatch as we enter the pig pen and get ready for the NFL draft by looking at some great National Football League history.
Hey, Darren, how are you today?
I'm doing super, Ed, and I think we got some interesting folks to talk about that were drafted in a number 27 position. So what are your takes on this?
Well, we'll start with the theme that we've been talking about at the top from a lot of these picks, and that is recently the number 27 pick is pretty underwhelming. I went back again, my list goes back to 1980, and looking over the last 10 or 12 years or so, like Devin Lloyd, Tre'Davious White, Kenny Clark, you know, pretty good players, but nobody that stands out, no home runs or anything like that. The top five is also going to be a little underwhelming. I thought this one was, I found a lot of okay players. There wasn't many busts or anybody that really stood out. You know, there were some quality offensive linemen that weren't spectacular. A guy like Kevin Zeitler, who was drafted in 2012. John Fina played for the Bills for many years. And William Roberts was drafted by the Giants, and he played forever in the NFL. Now, those guys, they really didn't combine for many Pro Bowls or anything, but they had very long careers. We're in the league a long time, and we're kind of like rock-solid veterans. We had 3 years in a row, 87, 88, and 89, that wide receivers were taken 27th overall, and all three were underwhelming. Ricky Nitil for the Broncos, Wendell Davis for the Bears, and Sean Collins for the Falcons. And I do not even remember Sean Collins in 19. I don't even know. I didn't know that name at all. So yeah,
the first two I did, I remember Nikhil and Tyler, but I don't recognize the third one either.
Yeah. They're very kind of, again, sort of like underwhelming, like, okay, fine. You know, they hung around for a little bit. And then also not just receivers, but there was a theme with this pick. There were some running backs that made a mark very briefly, very briefly. So they didn't. None of these guys made the top five because they just didn't do it long enough. D'Angelo Williams in 2006, who had a pretty good career. Neil Anderson for the Bears, you'll probably remember in 1986. Mm-hmm. If you go back and look at his numbers, a really nice burst there, right? Just for like a 2 or 3 year period, and then it kind of faded away. And then probably the most interesting one would go about all the way back to 1980. Would be Charles White. He was one of the more, popular, memorable college players. Obviously, won the Heisman at USC. He had one season around 800 yards, and then he had never had another one more than 500. He had off the field issues when he was drafted. He even came out and said that he had a big cocaine problem. It really hampered his career. He was drafted by the Browns, sort of the Cleveland story, I guess. that'll drive anybody to drugs.
Yeah. Right.
And then, in the mid 80s, he was given like a new life by his college coach. John Robinson was coaching the Rams. He brought White in. And in 1987, Charles White was actually the offensive player of the year. I'm sorry, the comeback player of the year. He was the comeback player of the year, and he led the league in rushing in 1987. And then he faded away again. He had a, you know, kind of that weird, you know, 1 year resurgence. But he also did not make the top five. He was probably my number one cut.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting draft because we've been talking the last couple, you know, we've had 2-3 Hall of Famers. That's one of the barometers that we can measure these drafts by. Only one Hall of Famer in this draft at this draft position at number 27, which I'm sure you're going to talk about here in a little bit. So I won't steal your thunder.
There will be two.
Yeah, there probably will be two. But as of right now, recording, only one. So I guess that sort of leads us into who do you have as your top five picks?
Well, number five, you know, it's very strange for me to put him here because, you know, the theme of the running backs and the brief bursts. Well, this is a running back with a brief burst, but the burst was so explosive that I had to include him. And that is Larry Johnson, drafted number 27 overall in 2003 by the Chiefs, running back from Penn State. He first couple of years, he didn't do much of anything. And then out of nowhere in 2005 and 2006, the guy had over 1,700 yards rushing in both years and 37 combined touchdowns. He also caught 74 passes over those two seasons. And that was sort of it. Like he had a bunch of injuries after that. He had a decent year in 2008, and then he was gone. And he was a very odd, strange guy off the field. There were some weird things that happened there. But I felt that his two-year run was so – you could make an argument that for 2 years, he was the best player in the NFL. And so when you reach that peak, even if it's a short peak, to me that's worthy of inclusion, especially when the overall list wasn't all that strong.
Yeah, can't say enough about, you know, this guy – he did have those couple of real peak years and, you know, then had some years that you sort of forgot about him, like you're saying. But, yeah, I think it's a solid pick at number five.
And then going on to number four, again, this is not an overwhelming one because I didn't think the list was all that overwhelming. But I've got Devin McCourty, defensive back, drafted in 2010 by the Patriots. 13 years, all in New England, and that coincided with three Super Bowls, I believe. Yeah, they won three Super Bowls over that time. He was second in defensive rookie of the year. He did make three all pro first or second teams. He had 35 interceptions and he played in 24 playoff games. So, you know, another reason I look at him is, you know, during that was during, you know, we had the three eras of Patriots football, the early Super Bowl champions, the drought teams that were good, but didn't win it. And then the ones that won the three, and McCourty was a big part of that last group. That won the three. He was one of the best defensive players, maybe consistently their best defensive player in that era of Patriots football. And, you know, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of an interesting, I think they had that one or two seasons where the Patriots picked up his brother too, and they were both in the defensive backfield. I thought that was kind of a cool family reunion there.
And now we see him on TV a lot, and they're both really good in the booth.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely great ball players that know their football.
Yep. Yep. So moving on to number three, this one surprised me a little bit. The numbers were a little bit better. I certainly remembered the player, but the numbers were a little bit better than I remembered. That would be Roddy White, drafted in 2005 by the Falcons, wide receiver. He was an 11-year steady performer. He had not to the extreme of like Larry Johnson, but he had a mid-career burst. You know, he had six straight 1,000-yard seasons, so that's great as a receiver. And he had back-to-back 100-plus catch seasons, which is pretty rare in the history of the NFL. And he had double-digit touchdowns in each of those years, too, so he was making some big plays. In his second-to-last year, he also caught 80 passes, so he was good throughout. He only played in five playoff games. You know, they weren't the Falcons were sort of a middling team, but they did have some very good offenses with Matt Ryan. You know, he overlapped with Julio Jones there a little bit. He was on the Super Bowl team that lost to the Patriots in the comeback game, but he wasn't a big part of the team. I think that was his final game. But he was a lifetime Falcon, probably one of the better Falcons ever. And he's number three on my list.
I think that's another solid pick. Yeah, I can remember him. That was big news when they got Julio Jones to pair with him because he was actually better before Julio Jones came on the scene. And you would think that would almost, you know, Julio Jones would take some of the attention away from Roddy White, but sort of fading in the background a little bit. Maybe Matty Ice decided not to throw his weight that much anymore. I don't know.
He became a number two for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So who do you have above Roddy White?
Well, speaking of number two, I've got the other guy that I think our number one guy's clearly in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure that he will be in the Hall of Fame. And that is DeAndre Hopkins, another wide receiver drafted in 2013 by the Texans. I think he had his career is interesting. It's not maybe the peak, like isn't quite as explosive as some of his counterparts, other receivers, but he had an insane stretch from 2015 through 2020. He caught 104 or more passes 4 out of 6 years. That's amazing.
Yeah.
1,200 or more yards 5 out of 6 years. And he did it all without a great offense, without a great quarterback. You know, those years, really his whole career, honestly, certainly through the prime of his career with the Texans and the Cardinals. Never great quarterbacks, never great teams, never great offenses, and incredible production. With some of the better hands we've ever seen, spectacular catches. And then he had a drop-off where he's become a little bit more of an average receiver, but he's still playing. And again, he's drafted in 2013, and he's still going. He has 1,006 catches, and to me, that's a Hall of Fame absolute lock. No question about it.
Yeah, it's D-Hop, you know, especially with the Texans, was just unbelievable. He was probably the premier wide receiver in the league for a few years of his career down in Houston. And, still a very solid player. We saw him playing quite a bit this year.
Yep.
And had another decent year, you know, as a number two, really. You know, it's hard to think of him as a number two, but that's sort of where his career path has taken him. So, yeah, I definitely agree with him being in your second slot.
So his bust will be in Canton next to our number one guy. And this will be brief, Darren, because number one is Dan Marino, drafted number 27 by the Dolphins in 1983 in the famous quarterback draft of 1983. What can we say about Marino? I'd say he's mildly polarizing when it comes to comparing to the other Hall of Fame quarterbacks. There's no debate whether he should be in the Hall of Fame or not. You'd be an idiot to argue that. But there maybe is a debate amongst the Hall of Fame quarterbacks where he might land. And the big thing against him was always, you know, made the Super Bowl his second year and then never got back. You know, that's probably the number one mark against him. Had some playoff disappointments, had some games where he didn't play particularly well in the playoffs as well. But really for me, that was always more a function of a team that had poor defenses teams in the Marino era never rose to his level. As far as I was concerned, there weren't a lot of other, he really didn't play with any other great players. He really didn't.
Yeah. And that's as a Steelers fan, I think that might be one of the number one regrets. Here you had this kid that grew up in Pittsburgh, played at Central Catholic High School, played at Pitt, you know, had pretty good careers in both of those places. And the Steelers end up taking Gabe Rivera at number 21, which would have really helped them, you know, a great nose tackle. He had gotten a bad car accident and was never really able to play for the Steelers. But that was always sort of the regret that throughout Marino's career, you know, why didn't they take Marino? And there was talk where they were going to trade for him in the 90s, you know, back when Cowher first took over, they were talking about trading. But probably him and Johnny Unitas, letting Johnny Unitas go, are probably two of the biggest mistakes that the organization has made that I think that they'll admit.
Sure. Sliding doors. You just never know.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So, yeah, I think he's definitely a no-brainer on there. Some people that you didn't talk about, and I'm surprised, didn't even make your honorable mention list. Mark Bruner was drafted. Real solid tight end for the Steelers. He was sort of the Heath Miller before Heath Miller, you know, great blocking back, caught a few passes here and there, but really helped with that power run game. And one of the most underrated quarterbacks of all time, I think, Tommy Kramer was drafted by Minnesota in 1977, sort of the guy that took over for Fran Tarkington after all those great seasons that he and I guess Joe Capp had a few in between there when Tarkington went to the Giants. But what a great career Kramer had too, coming off the bench or when he started after Tarkington's career. So just wanted to make sure we mentioned those guys.
Got it.
Yeah, so I guess that takes us to some stats here. Our top position sort of flip-flops. We've been talking a lot about defensive players being the top position at the other slots we talked about. This time the running back is king at that slot. We've had 10 of those taken, so one out of every 9 picks has been a running back at the 27 position. That one Hall of Famer we talked about earlier is Marino. And we have our draft state stat of the day. I don't know if you're ready for this.
I'm ready.
I see you're sitting down, so that's good. Ready. All right. This one, we've been talking a little bit about Oklahoma. You have your hat on the last couple of days. Well, we're going to talk about my favorite college team. And that's Notre Dame holds a remarkable streak of having at least one player drafted for 80 consecutive years, including the supplemental drafts.
Okay.
That is only outshined by two other schools. USC and Michigan are the only two schools to have an NFL draftee in every single year since 1939. So 88 straight drafts for those two schools having somebody drafted. And you think about that, you know, you have some World War II drafts going on in between there where not a whole lot of guys were taken. And USC and Michigan both had folks going to the NFL.
That's very impressive.
Yeah. So I think that wraps us up for day 27 in our 27th slot at the NFL draft. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow and continue our trek towards that National Football League draft.
See you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Sports History Network, where legends live on and the past plays loud.
Welcome to the place where history's proud, from gridiron glory to the hardwood stars, from the racetrack heat to Olympic bars. It's the voices, the stories, the moments you miss, told by fans and pros who live for this. Hook and Thimmick, the Sports History Network, where the past comes alive, podcasts and blogs that keep the flame high. From Babe to Brady, Alley to the Dome, if it's history and sports, then this is the home. SportsHistoryNetwork.com, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.